start.
All righty. Welcome back from the summer. Good morning. I call the San Francisco Department of Disability and Aging Services Commission meeting of Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025 to order. I am the DOS Commission President, Janet Spears. This commission meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of the Brown Act. As noted on the agenda, members of the public may observe this meeting via sfgovtv.org and sfgovtv channel 78, and they may offer public comment by calling the published public comment phone number. I'd like to welcome the members of the public and staff who are watching us live on sfgovtv. To eliminate background interference, all panelists and presenters that are presenting via WebEx are asked to mute themselves when not speaking or waiting to present. The San Francisco HSA DOS Commission acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land, and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First People. Mr. Secretary, will you please take the roll?
Good morning, and thank you, President Spears. Commissioners, please respond with present when I call your name. President Janet Y. Spears.
Present.
Vice President Nelson Lum.
Present.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner.
But
morning. Commissioner Wanda Zhang.
Present.
Commissioner Martha Knudsen.
Present.
Commissioner Barbara Sklar.
Present.
Commissioner Linda Parker Pennington.
Present.
And DOS Executive Director Kelly Dierman.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioners, the next item is item 3, communications. We'd like to provide further instructions for the public comment process. Public comment will be available on each item on this agenda and during general public comment. Both channel 78 and sfgovtv.org are streaming the number across the screen. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Comments or opportunities to speak during the public comment period are available via phone call. During each public comment period, viewers and callers will be instructed to call 1-415-655-0001, access code 2664-080-9743, pound, and then pound again. When connected, you will hear the meeting discussions, but you'll be muted in listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up, dial star 3 to be added to the speaker line. Best practices are to call from a quiet location, speak clearly and slowly, and turn down your television or radio. You'll have 3 minutes to speak, and you'll be informed by the moderator when you have 30 seconds left. After 30 seconds, you'll be muted and placed back to listening mode. Alternatively, public comment can be submitted by email to ravi.derbige@sfgov.org. If you submit public comment via email, it'll be forwarded to the commission and will be included as part of the official docket. Are there any other communications from the DOS Commission members? Nope. Okay. We can go to the next item.
Sure. Commissioners, your next item is Agenda Item 4, approving the minutes of Wednesday, July 2nd, 2025, the DOS Commission meetings. Are there any comments or questions regarding these minutes? Mr. Secretary, do we have anyone from the public who wishes to comment on this item?
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on this item? Moderator, can you please open the line for any callers? Are there no callers? Thank you.
Hearing no further requests to speak on this item, is there a motion to approve the Wednesday, July 2nd, 2025 DOS Commission meetings?
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Secretary, will you please take a roll call vote to approve the Wednesday, July 2nd, 2025 DOS Commission meeting minutes?
Yes. President Janet Y. Spears, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Nelson Lum, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Martha Knudsen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Wanda Zhang, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Barbara Sklar, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Commissioner Linda Parker Pennington, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thanks. We have a unanimous vote.
Thank you. Commissioners, our next item is item number 5, is the Executive Director Report. This will be presented by the DOS Executive Director, Kelly Dierman. You know, I miss 1 month. I can't remember my words.
Right.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back from our summer break. Appreciate being here. So I just have a few things to report on. Just at the federal level, H.R. 1, which was the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, has passed, as you all know. We do not have any updates at this time. We're working very closely with the city attorney's office and getting our direction from them and from the state, waiting to see what, you know, all of the details. We're hoping not to do anything wrong, but that feels impossible because it is, there is a lot in that bill. I will say that we are spending a lot of time on our DEI work and making sure that it is said in a way that makes the most sense and continues to serve the populations we serve, but won't get us in trouble with the federal government. So I will know more on HR 1 in the coming months. Nothing is set to start until next year. So I just want you all to know that, yes, we are working on it. We're trying to figure out what to do, what not to do, and we'll have, I'll just have more information once we finish with the city attorney and other things. So apologies that I don't have more up-to-date information, but that's all that's happening right now. We're in a waiting period. Okay, in other news, at the local level, we are, hard for me to believe it's been 4 years already, and we're doing our community needs assessment, which I'm sure you all are very much aware. So the way we are doing that is that DOS is hosting 12 town hall style events throughout the city and online. There are 11 in-person forums. There's one in each supervisorial district and then one virtual forum, which will be citywide. We've already done, I believe, five of the in-person forums. Most of them have been really well attended. One was so well attended that we were sure there was a fire hazard, but we pushed through. And we had one that was not very well attended, but it's been wonderful for me to visit each district and talk to the folks who are showing up and finding out what their needs are, what their concerns are. It's been a good time. So at these forums, we're working with a new consultant, Clarity, and they facilitate structured conversations to foster open discussion and generate insights. And then we have small group discussions on topics like community needs and priorities for ensuring quality of life as people age in place. There are written comments at poster stations about community strengths and DOS services, plus there's an anonymous drop-in box. And then, of course, we have language interpretation at each of these forums. So that's how we're doing those community forums. Next, those will be finished in the next couple of weeks. And then we also have a population survey that was designed and implemented by Clarity, and we're hoping to reach 2,250 unduplicated survey responses. So we will let you know how we're doing there. And the survey also is in multiple languages, and it's online, and there's paper. And then the last thing we do is, I hate it when I can't find my notes, is the focus groups. And we're going to have 10. Oh, here it is. Okay. So we're going to have 14 focus groups, and this will help us supplement community forums and dive more deeply into specific issues with select subpopulations, including adults and transitional age youth with disabilities, BIPOC older and disabled adults, monolingual older and disabled adults, LGBTQ plus older and disabled adults, and other populations, including veterans, family caregivers of older and disabled adults, and older and disabled adults experiencing homelessness, and people aging with HIV. I just want to give a huge shout out to the OCP team and to the planning team who are coordinating all of this. It's a really heavy lift, but really important for us because, as you know, it helps us determine where our resources should go over the next 4 years. So I'm excited that it's happening, but I know that it is a lot of work for our team. All right. The next thing is that you all have heard, you know, after the passage of Proposition E, that there is the commission the Streamlining Task Commission Streamlining Task Force. And an email was sent out by our Deputy Director, Cindy Kaufman, about this in August. And the reason it is coming to light, as you know, Proposition E, the goal was to look at all of the commissions and advisory bodies across San Francisco, determine if there's any duplication or if some of them don't need to be acting anymore, and then the task force will make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. All things aging are coming up October 15th. And what it has been very clear to us from this task force that they are wanting to streamline. And so we thought it would be better to come from us versus them deciding how we should do it. You all know that we have, in addition to the commission, we have two advisory committees. The Advisory Council, OAC, I say it wrong all the time, the Oversight and Advisory Council, and the Dignity Fund Oversight and Advisory Council. What we have proposed to them is that those two bodies can be combined. It's all in the email. We believe that this makes sense in particular because the Oversight and Advisory Council for the Commission on that we have to have as part of being a AAA is very hard to fill all the seats, and we can't get rid of it. It's required, and we don't want to get rid of it. And the Dignity Fund Oversight and Advisory Council is required after the passage of the Dignity Fund. We believe that those two can be combined. All of the details are in the email, and we'll know more after October 15th when the hearing happens, and everyone is welcome to go and voice their opinion on it one way or the other. So we will see what happens with that. The other thing I want to tell you is that in July, along with the mayor, we hosted the first, that I know of, disability roundtable discussion at the Disability Cultural Center. We had about 25 members of the community come and talk about issues particularly related to the community. The mayor came and others from his office. It was super engaging. It was an amazing event as far as I could tell. And the mayor really leaned in and listened to some of the concerns that folks have and said at the end to me, you know, you really don't know what you don't know. And that he was really glad to be there and promised to come back in 6 months. And we have some, you know, marching orders of things that we can actually start doing now and what he wants to work with us on. One particular item is around Sunset Dunes, the new park that has been hard for folks to get access between the bikes and the scooters and the skateboards. So Rec and Park is already working on that. And then also one of the things that the community is really interested in is naming this area a disability cultural district. So we're working with the mayor's office and Supervisor Mahmood on that. But it was a really wonderful event in my time that has never happened, and no one could remember if that had ever happened before. And I think we all felt really proud, and the mayor and the mayor's office were were, I think they were a little surprised at how organized we were, how we were able to talk about, you know, real things and offer solutions. So I look forward to the next time we can do that. And then the last thing that I want to mention is that, as you all know, Jill Nielsen left in July. And I want to introduce, I'm going to have you introduce yourself. Yes, so you can come up here. The new acting deputy director of programs is Megan Elliott. Megan was here. She was with DOS or HSA for about 19 years and then left and was over at the assessor's office for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And now she's back. We're really happy to have you back. And I thank you for doing this. And we will have a process later in October for other people to apply as we try to get the permanent. But Megan's been here just a couple of weeks and is already making her mark. So please, Megan.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm happy to be here today to introduce myself to you. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah.
As Kelly mentioned, I was formerly an employee of DOS. I started working for the city in 1997. And I came in as a IHSS trainer, so training social workers how to do needs assessments for the consumers. And over the years, I worked my way up through the ranks. I got my master's in public administration with the University of San Francisco. And I focused at the time on studying how the city was creating the Department of Aging and Adult Services as it was at that time, because that was happening concurrently. And then also, I was able to study how DOS combined with DHS to create HSA. Eventually, I became a budget analyst and then went back to IHSS as a manager. And finally, I was program director there for, I think, 6 years. And then I left. I was recruited to go work at the assessor recorder's office, which is a strange move for most people involved with human services. But at the time, they needed a manager to come in and really streamline their business processes and make sure they were able to meet their strategic goals. So that's what I focused on while I was there. And I am really happy to be back at DOS. It feels like coming home. A lot of my old colleagues are here with me, my folks from IHSS who've also moved on and been promoted in various things. It's great to see, and I look forward to working with you all in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all I have.
Commissioners, are there any questions?
Maybe just...
Yeah,
sure. I keep on the HR1 bill, if there are anything that we can do, I continue to really appreciate the fact that we get contacted when we can make calls. So if there are, I like the specificity. Okay. And I just go on 5 calls, which is so easy because it's great to do. And you can get to the number right away, and then you just use the script. So this is really easy to do. I can't reiterate that enough. So please continue to do that where appropriate. And then if there is anything with the, I know we're in another budget battle, there's another bill in Congress, whatever. If there's any play there, please continue to inform us. And, you know, maybe there's a strategy there to work on some of this. So just, I appreciate it. I bet it's really easy. I completely hope other people are utilizing this. And it literally takes me a minute.
Yeah.
So please, it's like, you know, it's not hard to do these calls, and they really can make a difference.
Yes.
So do that. And then just continue to thank you around the streamlining task force. Thanks for informing us. Appreciate the detail so we understood that there's a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know.
Right.
So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. For
okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. We will continue. U.S. Aging is really good about sending out updates and blasts, and we'll continue to send them on. Yeah. And we're just doing what we can.
We can all do what we can.
Right.
I just wanted to weigh in and just say kudos to all of the efforts in community outreach and engagement and being willing to learn what you don't know, because there can be so many surprises, and you don't know what you're going to deal with, but then you're also responding.
Right.
And I think just the act of listening helps people feel that they're part of a process, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm an organizational monk, so, you know, I really appreciate that, and I also know the dynamics of that. It can be pretty challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And then also when you don't have answers for things, but you make, you know, there are expectations and there's a follow through process. So I just want to say, I know it's a lot of heavy lifting to do all that, focus groups, task force and surveys. And
mm-hmm.
And then I also, and all the analytics, and you know, it's a lot of staff work in terms as well as the engagement process. And then I do want to say kudos for getting out ahead on the streamlining process the way you did, because it's always better to figure out what needs to be done and to make those recommendations and not have somebody tell you how to do it. And then you get smarter in the process too. So I just want to say thank you for all of that good leadership.
Thank you. And about the community needs assessment, I forgot to also the shout out to the intake, because they have also been showing up and helping and distributing information and taking the calls. So it really is a team effort, and it's showing. And it's wonderful for me not only to see the folks who show up to participate, but watching staff interact with our older adults and people with disabilities is just, it's super heartwarming and reminds me why I get up every day. So, yeah, thank you.
I have one question, and it's, you know, more about the, and by when will this be done? Mm-hmm. So October 15th is when the hearing is.
Yes.
For, I'll call it the streamlining and property. Mm-hmm. And then is there an end date that they're seeking? Is this like the end of this year or early next year? Or
There is an end date. I don't have it on the top of my head, but I believe they want it done by the end of this year. Then it goes to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
I think it's all supposed to be wrapped up like in the next 6 or 7 months.
Okay.
But it's getting really complicated. At the hearing, at the last hearing, there were a bunch of people, and I think the task force wasn't expecting all of those folks, and because people haven't been really showing up before. And we're asking these volunteers, the task force people, to decide across the city what's important and what's not important. It's very, it's very complicated, and I'm super happy that I'm not on that task force.
And then as we go to the community needs assessment, you said that there are focus groups that are then coming. Is that, I have forgotten the timeline for that to come to a completion. Is it the end of this year?
So
that the whole needs assessment,
the whole, all of the information gathering will be done by the end of October.
Anyone? Wow.
Okay. End of October. And then, and I believe the surveys have to be in by the end of September. Okay. Thank you, Dana. And so then the hard work starts of gathering all that information. The report will be out in early next year.
Yeah, your own task force.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. All right. Mr. Secretary, the next item. Oh, I'm stepping all over you. Your turn.
Commissioners, item 6 is the DOS employee recognition. Executive Director Dearman, President Spears, and the DOS Commission will honor the DOS September 2025 Employee of the Month, Jesus Diaz, who's an intake social worker at the DOS Benefits and Resource Hub.
So It is a true honor to recognize Jesus Diaz, an intake social worker at the DOS Benefits and Resources Hub, as the DOS Employee of the Month for September 2025 in celebration of his exceptional dedication and compassionate service. As a seasoned social worker with over 18 years of experience, Jesus has consistently demonstrated exceptional dedication and compassion in his work with older adults and people with disabilities in San Francisco. His ability to connect with clients on a personal level, understand their unique needs, and advocate for their well-being is truly remarkable. He has excellent social work skills and can de-escalate stressful situations and focus on risk factors in assessing emergency services. During his time with the DOS Integrated Intake Team for the last 12 years, Jesus has received numerous compliments, thank yous, and praises from individuals and families he has helped. One in particular was from a young disabled adult whom he assisted at the San Francisco Public Library during a DOS Hub outreach day. The individual complimented his work and said, "It was nice not to be judged by others for being a non-binary disabled adult in San Francisco." They were very thankful for Jesus and his service. In addition to his outstanding professional skills, Jesus is a valued team member who always goes above and beyond to support his colleagues. He is well known for his positive attitude, willingness to share knowledge, and ability to inspire others. He readily navigates the never-ending changes to DOS intake operations with new programs added and new protocols implemented. His unwavering commitment to the DOS mission and his exceptional contributions to the DOS Integrated Intake Team makes Jesus deserving of this recognition. And also, is it okay for me to say it? We're so excited, you know, for Jesus as he is getting ready to go on to the next chapter. We are going to miss you desperately, and we thank you so much for all you have done.
I don't even know what direction to
look
in.
Go, just do that one.
Okay. But okay, yeah. So many mics here. So I wanted to thank the commissioners. Thank you, Kelly. And then also the DOS leadership team for providing me with guidance and direction all these years. And my DOS intake team, you guys are my family away from home. I don't want to get choked up. As well as my extended family, Adult Protective Services, IHSS, the public conservatives, newbies to us, and DOS Medi-Cal, you know, for being, you know, supportive as well. Let's see. My family and my partner, Michael Inman, who's not able to make it here, but I know he's, you know, he's excited to see this link later on. So somebody send me the link, okay? Really. But I love you all. I really do. And thank you for everything. That's it.
Made clear about his next adventure, but maybe.
All right. Commissioners, item 7 is the case report presented by Fiona Hinze via WebEx. Fiona, are you here?
Oh, Fiona's here, actually.
Oh, yeah. Hold on 1 second, Fiona.
So sweet. I love the whole thing. Yeah, right.
There we go, Fiona. Can you hear us? No, you just went back on.
There you go. There we go. Thank you. All right.
Go ahead, Fiona.
There we go. Thank you, commissioners. And sorry for the technical delay. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Greetings, commissioners. I hope you enjoyed your summer recess. And I know it's been a while. It's been a couple of months for me specifically. And I have quite a few announcements. One is, as you know, we have been without a co-chair for several months now, as Judith has had left her center in the spring. So I'm pleased to announce that Lucia Montano, who is the from SDA, will be our new co-chair of the board, and then I will be stepping down as co-chair as of the end of the year. I will still remain on the case board for a while, but Lucia will be our new co-chair, and will be our new co-chair starting in September officially. And so you will likely be seeing more of her, as hopefully she will be able to present to you in person going forward at your meetings. So that is exciting. Now, as always, I will walk you through the programming that we had, and then we do have quite a substantial update on our MetaFund grant progress, so we'll get into that. At our August meeting, we had Hagar Dickman, who came and spoke to us about the implications of HR1 and potential advocacy going forward. Unfortunately, it was a very good presentation, but unfortunately, I cannot provide you any more details than Director Dearman did. But it was good to get the perspective of someone who had been working in IHSS issues, and also to know that she didn't know what was coming down the pike either in terms of implementation. So I think we are all in the same boat and are looking forward to see how everything unfolds. For our September meeting next week, we have an AI expert coming in, and he will be talking to us about the risk of AI and also how to use it safely. And we all know that AI is here, and so using it safely and protecting client data and whatnot is important, so we look forward to that presentation. And now to our update on our MetaFund grant. We have hired a strategic planner, Amy Queskin, who has a background in doing strategic planning for primarily arts organizations, but that has been she's been really good, and that relationship is going really well. We've also hired a senior project manager consultant, Stefan Miner, who used to actually serve on the case board, and he is helping us out with our outreach, and will be helping us out specifically with stakeholder engagement. And so we've had our board retreat last week. We had that and we talked about our internal, a lot of internal capacity things and sort of this internal transition that we'll be undergoing with me stepping away from my role, and also Lihia coming into hers, and seeing how CASE can strengthen its infrastructure. And we're also in the midst of doing a SWOT analysis, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Our strategic planner has completed our sort of internal portion of that with interviews with board members, et cetera. And so we also intend to be doing, in the coming months, focus groups and key informant interviews with some external members and city leaders. And so lots of needs assessments and strategic plans going on. CASE is also, speaking of the needs assessment, CASE is also, and the Dignity Fund Coalition are also promoting the survey and forums, and we are glad to hear that the forums have been going so well, and also look forward to seeing how the count is going on the survey results. And believe that is my report, if anyone has any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions from the commission regarding the CASE report?
Just one of clarification, because I heard a lot of assessment and stakeholder feedback in what was reported. So I'm wondering, are we using the input from the needs assessment evaluation process and the data gathering from that as an input in the strategic planning process, or are these sort of two separate processes? I just
for CASE, they're kind of two different processes. So we got funding from MetaFund to do a kind of a CASE specific strategic plan and capacity building. That's a good thing you raise actually about the need assessment data that DOS is collecting. I think that could be used, but really at this point the MetaFund grant is really for CASE internally and to strengthen our own capacity. So we're really trying to do some work with our stakeholders, particularly around CASE and what CASE can do for them. But that is a good point of clarity around the data, because there's a lot of needs assessments going on, and figuring out how we fit into that context is something to keep, that we should keep in mind, definitely.
Thank you. Yeah, I think in the interest of streamlining the processes, which seems to be a theme going on across the agencies, that it's might be a timing thing. You know, once the needs assessment is fully completed and analyzed, that can then be an input into the strategic planning process. That's typically how it's done. So anyway, just food for thought. So thank you.
We can definitely look at that once DOS has all their data collected and also see what they're willing to share with us, then that might be an input.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right.
Any other comments? Okay. You're back.
All righty. Commissioners, item 8 is general public comment, an opportunity for members of the public to address the commission on matters that are not on today's calendar. Are there any members of the public that would like to address the commission today?
Hi.
Hey, good morning. All righty, thank you.
Thank you.
So you have 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll be back.
I'm going to start, and then I'll let you know when you have 30 seconds left.
Okay, thank you very much. So good morning, Commissioners and Executive Director Dearman. I'm really happy to be here today as Marie Jobling representing the Dignity Fund Coalition. Appreciate that Executive Director Dearman did talk about the effort to streamline the task force in various bodies that are here in the city. And I just wanted to go a little beyond that and provide some information because the process between now and October 15th is really open for participation in the community. And the Dignity Fund campaign wasn't just about funding. The legislation was designed to assure that that those who are impacted, both on the staff and the consumer side, had a place at the table to guide development over time and to provide accountability and transparency. Without a strong voice now at the Commission Streamlining Task Force, we will see the Oversight and Advisory Committee reduced with several and combined, reduced along with several other bodies, and the Service Provider Work Group likely disappear. More importantly, the current policy of sharing appointments with the Board of Supervisors and other bodies will disappear in favor of appointments only by the mayor. Now, the process has already begun, and we encourage DOS commissioners and others to learn what's being proposed directly and to make their thoughts known between now and October 15th. I do have a lot of empathy for the people on the Commission Streamlining Task Force, because it is an awesome job, but it's a very short-lived one. And many of the people who have been on these advisory bodies and commissions on behalf of this department have done really good work for many, many years. So whatever happens here, we want to recognize their leadership as things transition here. So what we have handed out to you is just a memo that has a little bit more about what's happening when, and there are opportunities to hear the DOS presentation in more detail at the Oversight and Advisory Committee, the DOS Advisory Committee. The Dignity Fund Committee will also talk about it at their next meeting, so the dates and times for all of those are on this memo. And I certainly would be happy to answer any questions.
Can't answer questions.
Pardon me?
We can't answer
questions. You can't ask me questions. Okay, well, I'll be around. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak today? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their request. No callers. Thank you very much. Okay, commissioners, your next item is item 9, old business. Commissioners, please indicate by raising your hand if there's any old business that you'd like to discuss. Okay.
All righty. Commissioners, the next agenda item is item 11, new business, or item 10, new business.
10, that's my bad.
That's okay. Item 10A is information only and does not require a vote from the commission. The presentation of the DOS fiscal year 25-26 schedule of request for proposal will be presented by Ms. Maceo? Mm-hmm. Person?
Yep.
And Emily Miller.
Emmy.
Emmy Miller. See? Get the hard one, miss the easy one. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Executive Director Dearman, President Spears, and Commissioners. My name is Emmy Miller. I'm a contracts manager at HSA, Office of Contract Management. I'm here today with Maceo Person, Program Manager, and the DOS Office of Community Partnerships to present the fiscal year 25-26 Request for Proposal RFP schedule and provide an overview of the program procurements our teams are working on. Following successful awards and negotiations, each agreement will be brought before this commission for approval. At this point, I'll turn it over to Maceo, who will walk us through the four-year Dignity Fund cycle, the community needs assessment, and key program details.
Hello, everyone. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Director Dearman. It's nice to be here today. I believe that you're probably familiar with this slide from previous years, but as Director Dearman had given a really comprehensive overview of the CNA, the Dignity Fund needs assessment. I won't go too much more in detail with that, but for this fiscal year, that is a big focus of our work. And so moving forward in this year, you'll see that there's 7 RFPs that are coming out as opposed to last year when there were 24, because we're focusing on the needs assessment for our team. Here you see a list of requests for proposals with the program name, the RFP release, the anticipated RFP release date, and a tentative commission date for approval. And we work as much as we can to stick to this calendar schedule. So this is what we're looking like for the request for proposals for this upcoming fiscal year. And I wanted to just highlight a couple of the programs on each slide. And these are all programs that are located in nutrition and wellness, housing support, or caregiver support programs. So one of the programs coming out is Nutrition Supportive Services for Healthy Outcomes. This is administered by Project Open Hand, and this program delivers medically tailored meals and groceries to approximately 500 older adults and adults with disabilities who are managing chronic health conditions. Another one that's up that's big for us is Temporary Respite Caregiver Support Program. It's administered by the Institute on Aging, and this program supports unpaid caregivers through assessments, skill building plans, and caregiving vouchers to help reduce burnout and increase capacity. The next slide is, next couple of slides will have renewals that are coming up. And so these are all slated to come on later, so you see in May, so that it gives the program analysts a chance to start monitoring process before renewing their contract. And a couple programs I wanted to highlight here is, of course, like the ADRCs that you're probably very familiar with, which is one of our core services here at DOS, that are a cornerstone of our service work. They ensure that older adults and adults with disabilities can access benefits and referrals with ease. And there's at least one ADRC in each supervisorial district, and then we have 2 population-specific ones that are citywide that are administered by Open House for the LGBTQ plus community and Toolworks for people with disabilities. Another program that I wanted to feature too is the LGBTQ plus mental health connections and technology support. This is a pilot program to support LGBTQ older adults and adults with disabilities in accessing more mental health care. It was conceived during the COVID-19 pandemic to try to get people access to virtual care and getting people technology support in accessing that during isolation. However, as services has gone into person services, now this program has shifted, and it's shifted to be able to provide in-person therapy for LGBTQ older adults and adults with disabilities, because that's what people are asking for at this point, is that they want to see people in person. Currently, the administrator of that is Curry Senior Center, and they have reported that as this program has progressed, those LGBTQ, the low barrier nature of getting therapy through their program has made it so that people are getting access to mental health care in a way that they wouldn't have previously. So they weren't accessing mental health care before this program. Then I wanted to also say a little bit about legal services. We're renewing contracts with 7 nonprofits to provide legal support for older adults and adults with disabilities. And these services include eviction prevention, benefits retention, and end-of-life planning. And then you'll see here we have the RAD Supportive Services Programs. So this one is administered by HomeRise, and these contracts support residents at 1750 McAllister and 666 Ellis Street with outreach, referrals, short-term case management, aimed at ensuring that residents are able to age in place with safely and with dignity. And then here we have our sole source contracts. And I just wanted to highlight that the program Legal and Housing Assistance for Veterans with Mental Health Disabilities is administered by Swords to Plowshares. And this contract provides free legal counseling and housing assistance to veterans with complex benefit claims or those at risk of homelessness. And that concludes my presentation for our schedule this year. And I want to turn it over to Emmy.
Thank you. Just to provide more detail on the types of procurements, the RFPs are for existing programs for which procurement authority has expired. Therefore, the new RFPs are being issued for a new four-year term. As Maceo mentioned, this year is lighter with only 7 RFPs compared to approximately 24 last year. There are 10 renewals for existing programs that are currently in contract with an option to extend in the existing RFPs. These do not require a new procurement, but they do require commission approval to extend the grant agreements. The 10 programs up for renewal consist of a total of 27 grant agreements. There are 3 sole source programs for which it has been determined that only one provider can provide these services. Therefore, no competitive solicitation process is required. For these, we will bring the sole source waiver and the grant agreement to commission for approval. The RFPs are scheduled earlier to ensure the agreement certification before the July 1st, 2026 term start date, while renewals are planned later in the year to allow for prior program monitoring and due diligence before the renewals. Thank you. This concludes our presentation, and we are available to answer any questions you may have.
So, commissioners, do you have any comments or questions regarding this item?
I just have
two
brief questions.
Sure.
Thanks for the presentation. I just want to clarify, in terms of the renewals you had mentioned, just to clarify, that these don't actually need to go out through an RFP process, and basically they can be renewed with the existing contractors. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The RFPs that are existing are not expired yet.
Right.
So we can use the same RFP and just extend the programs that are already in grants.
Okay. And that's assuming that they're in, are meeting their goals.
Of course, yes. Yes, that's part of the reason that it's 2+ an extension, possibility to extend.
Okay. And then also, we're also going, being able to go forward with these planned RFPs and renewals, assuming that the budget is in place to support these programs.
Yes, of course. Yeah, the budget team confirms the availability of funding before the RFPs are released, so we know what the amount for each RFP will be.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So just clarification. Thank you for the report. You mentioned that normally you have 24 RFPs and you've got this down to 7 in this cycle. And I'm just curious, how did you do that? What happened to the other RFPs, or did you consolidate in the RFP process?
Thank you for that question. Last year was a super heavy year with the 24, and this year is lighter with 7. It's part of the cycle. I guess our slides aren't up anymore, but part of the four-year cycle of when they come up. Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Did you want to talk more about
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a focus on concentrating a lot of the RFPs within like these groupings to try to make sort of our contracting more sort of efficient, and having like each program be having like a focused year where they go through a lot of submitting RFPs. But I think that this year has been intentionally lighter so that we can focus on the dignity if on needs assessment.
All right. Well, good. I'm impressed.
So is the expectation then in future years we'll have more RFPs again? That's what I'm just trying to connect those dots.
Yes.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So this is just a quieter year before we have an uptick in the
yeah.
Okay, got it. Other questions from the commission? I had one, but I lost it. So let me see if it'll come back. No, I didn't. So thank you very much. Mr. Secretary, do we have anyone from the public who wishes to comment on item 10A?
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on agenda item 11A, 10A? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment on item 10A. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their request. No callers? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, and it's nice to know what's ahead of us in the months to come.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioners, item 10B through 10D are action items that will require a vote by the commission. Our first item is item 10B, requesting authorization to enter into a new contract agreement with the Institute on Aging for the provision of elder and dependent adult abuse prevention during the period of September 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2029 in the amount of $2,012,500 plus a 10% contingency for a total amount not to exceed $2,213,750 presented by Benjamin Cicedos. Yay.
Good morning, commissioners and Director Dierman. My name is Ben Cicedos, and I'm here on behalf of Adult Protective Services to request your approval for a four-year contract with the Institute on Aging. This contract supports our mission to protect older adults and adults with disabilities in San Francisco by funding activities to intervene and further prevent abuse, neglect, exploitation, and self-neglect. The contract specifically supports two key areas. One is facilitation of multidisciplinary team meetings, or MDTs, and the other is training for mandated reporters on identifying and reporting suspected abuse, neglect, exploitation, and self-neglect. This is important because many of us have encountered situations, whether in the community or within our own families, where an older person or a person with disabilities appears to be in harm's way. We ask ourselves, why isn't anything being done? Often the answer is that these situations are complex. They may involve multiple jurisdictions, or the individual may be declining help, and that's where APS steps in. Our role is to assess the situation, connect individuals to resources, and coordinate a response across systems to protect the adult in need. One of the most effective tools is the multidisciplinary team model, which brings together professionals from across the city to collaborate on challenging cases. This contract supports three separate MDTs. We have the adult maltreatment MDT, which focuses on abuse by others, a high-risk self-neglect MDT, which addresses cases where individuals are at risk due to their own action or inaction, and the elder and dependent adult death review team MDT, which is a partnership with the medical examiner's office, hospitals, and relevant professionals to review cases where system improvements may have prevented harm. In addition to case coordination, this contract funds training, development, and delivery for professionals identified in the California Elder Abuse and Dependent Adult Civil Protection Act. These trainings help mandated reporters recognize and respond to signs of abuse and neglect. The Institute on Aging is a current provider of these services and has demonstrated strong performance in this role. We are seeking your approval to continue this partnership for another 4 years. Thank you for your time and consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions regarding this particular contract?
Really, sure. Really tiny minutia thing, I think. It just said funding for the contract is provided through county general funds. I know there's sections in the federal law a lot around elder abuse, so how is it that this program is not funded partially through federal funding? There's a title in the OOA for elder abuse, so I was just curious about it only being from county funds.
Absolutely. So yeah. This was broken down separately, and that's kind of a sneak preview. 7%, which is the Older Americans Act, is going to be part of the next agenda item.
Okay. And was this because this is a, was this a like a model? I guess what I was kind of getting at is this, was this a program that was created sort of in our own city as a model program, and that's how the funding kind of is generated for it, or is it unique in that way?
So the
or through the
multidisciplinary
is it unique in California, team, I guess, or something like that. Yeah.
So this is a requirement in the Welfare and Institutions Codes to have the multidisciplinary team sessions, as well as mandated reporter training. And San Francisco has historically done this through the granting process. This instance is a contract, and for that reason, the funding for Older Americans Act is also going to stay in a grant, which is the other.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I just wondered. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get it a little bit better.
Yeah.
I just wondered if it, sometimes those programs, the funding is because of the way it started. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. But yeah. This was just that. Okay. But it's a very great program, you know, so it's just, I'm just interested in having it continue, and it seems so innovative and effective. So just that's all. That's why I was intrigued by it. Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission?
Okay. Hearing no other comments, Mr. Secretary, can you open the phone lines for any public comment?
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on item 10B? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment on item 10B. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their request. There are no callers. Thank you very much.
Hearing no further requests to speak on the item, we will close public comment. Is there a motion from the commission?
So moved.
I'll second.
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Secretary, will you please take a roll call vote for item 10B?
Yes. President Genowise Spears, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Nelson Lum, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Martha Knutson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Wanda Zhang, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Barbara Sklar, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Commissioner Linda Parker Pennington, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thanks. We have a unanimous vote.
Thank you. Commissioners, our next item is item 10C, requesting authorization to enter into a new grant agreement with the Institute on Aging for the provision of elder abuse community education and outreach for the period of September 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2029 in the amount of $601,830. Plus a 10% contingency for a total amount not to exceed $662,013. Benjamin Cicedos is back with us to present this item.
Good to see you again. I'm here once again on behalf of Adult Protective Services, representing our mission to support and protect vulnerable adults in San Francisco. And I'm requesting your approval to enter into a four-year grant agreement with the Institute on Aging to provide elder abuse, community education, and outreach services. This work will focus on veterans, the general public, and members of the Asian American and Pacific Islander communities. This grant will allow the Department of Disability and Aging Services to expand and strengthen its elder abuse prevention efforts, especially in underserved communities, through culturally responsive outreach and education. You will note the structure of this grant has dedicated funding for certain subgroups. That's because research from the FBI and other agencies show that some groups are at even greater risk of abuse and exploitation. Veterans, for example, are often targeted by scams that exploit their benefits. Not dissimilarly, Asian American and Pacific Islander communities, particularly monolingual and newly immigrated residents, face unique vulnerabilities due to language barriers, potential for social isolation, and targeted scams. This grant is a proactive measure designed to reach people before harm occurs. As we know, San Francisco is home to a large and diverse AAPI population, and this grant will help us reach those residents with in-language education and culturally competent programming. The primary activities associated with this grant are in-language public education sessions on elder abuse prevention, funding to develop coordinated systems to educate and consult with service providers, public awareness campaign targeting scams affecting veterans' benefits, and targeted outreach to Asian American and Pacific Islander communities through culturally competent programming. The Institute on Aging is currently providing education and outreach services for APS, and in our program monitoring this spring was compliant with no findings and was meeting or exceeding service unit targets, providing confidence in the ability to fulfill the grant with great benefit to our community. I am asking for your approval to enter into agreement for this grant. I'm available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, do we have any questions regarding this particular contract? Sure. Commissioner.
One question and one comment. The question is, in terms of the outreach to the API community, my comment is I'm pleased to see that this has been factored in terms of focusing on the API community, because I think it is in need, especially as you pointed out, it is one of our larger population here in San Francisco. My question has to do, I guess, with what we already voted on, 10B and 10C. In terms of outreach education, so for 10B, the education is for mandated reporters, whereas here in 10C, the outreach education is for just the public in general. Is that correct?
Generally, that's correct. Okay. So the mandated reporter is a little bit more involved of a training and is focused on the roles that are listed in the Welfare and Institutions Code that we're required to provide training to, whereas this is more public outreach and community-based education and outreach.
Thank you.
Commissioners, are there other questions? Any of the commissioners online have any questions? Robbie?
Nope. Nope.
Okay. I'm hearing no further questions from the commission. Mr. Secretary, will you please open the phone lines for public comment?
Yeah, are there any members of the public that would like to comment on item 10C? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment on 10C. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their request. No callers. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hearing no further requests to speak on this item, we will close public comment. Is there a motion from the commission?
So moved.
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Secretary, will you please take a roll call vote to approve item 10C?
President Janet Weiss Spears, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Nelson Lum, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Martha Knutson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Sasha Bittner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Wanda Zhang, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Barbara Sklar, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Commissioner Linda Pennington, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thanks. We have a unanimous vote.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, our next item is item 10D, requesting authorization to enter into two new contracts with RideTrans for the period of September 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2029, in the amount of $715,000 plus a 10% contingency for a total amount not to exceed $786,500. Sandra Teixeira?
Yeah, you got it.
Ah, Sandra Teixeira will present this item.
Good morning, President Spears, fellow commissioners, and Executive Director Dierman. I'm Sandra Teixeira, the program manager at the Office of the Public Conservator. I've been with the Public Conservator Office since 2007. The Office of the Public Conservator works with individuals that are deemed gravely disabled by the Superior Court. Grave disability is the legal basis for LPS conservatorship, and it refers to the inability of an individual to provide for their own food, clothing, shelter, personal safety, or necessary medical care as a result of a mental disorder, severe substance use disorder, or both. As a routine function, the public conservator facilitates the transport of high-risk clients, including those with the potential for unpredictable and aggressive behaviors and elopement. Specialized transportation is needed to safely move these clients from hospital and jail settings to locked treatment facilities, and from locked treatment facilities to legal proceedings. In addition to high-risk transports, the public conservator facilitates non-emergency medical transports for clients who are not high-risk. Common examples are transporting clients from locked treatment facilities to unlocked treatment programs and to medical appointments in the community. In the adult protective services context, transportation is used to assist clients to meet with their legal services providers, to attend medical appointments, and obtain benefits. Commissioners, I seek your approval of these two new contracts. If you have any questions for me about these contracts, I am happy to answer them now. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, are there questions regarding this particular contract?
Okay. But I just have a quick
Commissioner Lim.
I note that in terms of the ambulatory and medical transportation, that basically it's been determined that you'll be, that we'll do an interim 6-month contract because they're not quite set up to do that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, absolutely. So yes, with the ambulatory and medical component, we are requesting to enter into a 6 months contract with the possibility of renewal, and that gives us time to assess the goodness of fit.
Okay. I mean, is that service being provided now by another vendor, or?
It is currently being provided by another vendor.
Okay.
At present.
Okay.
I have a quick question. Thank you for this. And I kind of have some personal experience with this, so it's a pretty important program. And I was just curious what the size of, is there an estimated size of the population that would be eligible for this these services?
Yes. Yeah, so our total caseload is about 700 clients right now.
Okay.
And any one of them might need this service.
Right.
Either the high risk or the non-emergency medical transport. So we have that available to all of our clients. And we share this resource with Adult Protective Services.
Okay, great. And the high risk is determined by, you know, past elopements, or how do you determine that?
Yes, so we are very thoughtful in our assessments, the clinical assessments, and we, since my office, the public conservator takes the lead in facilitating and arranging for the safest mode of transport. So yes, we would look at someone's history. That would give us information about what the future could look like. So we are ultimately looking for the safest mode of transport for everyone involved.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions from the commission? Mr. Secretary, will you please open the phone lines for any public comment on this matter?
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on agenda item 10D? Moderator, please open the phone line for public comment on item 10D. We'll allow some time for callers to submit their request. No callers. Thank you very much.
Hearing no further requests to speak on this item, we're going to close public comment. Is there a motion from the commission?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary, please, after the first and second, will you please take a roll call vote for item 10D?
Yes. President Spears, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Lum, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Knutson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Bittner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Zhang, how do you vote?
Yes.
Commissioner Sklar, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Commissioner Pennington, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thanks. We have unanimous vote.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, are there any announcements?
Announcement? I have one.
Sure.
Fleet Week will take place on October 5th, the week of October 5th. On Thursday, October 9th, between 5 to 8 p.m., there will be a block party at the 1500 block of Powell Street. The United States Navy Band will be playing there to entertain the community. The band will be joined by community entertainers. There's no charge for anyone who wants to attend. And this event is being hosted by American Legion Cathay Post 384.
All right. I love Fleet Week. Any other announcements? Okay. Hearing no further announcements, I will adjourn this meeting at 10:45, 46.